Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to The Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condo with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Slurpy McSlurperson?
Yeah, I've got my tea. It's nice and warm. You've had your pancakes?
How about my pancakes? I've also got a cup of tea. Usually I always go for coffee when I do a podcast today.
Me too.
I feel like I need a hug. A hug and a mug.
Yeah, me too.
No, it's not a cup of soup, a cup of tea.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's going on. What is going on? The world's crazy these days. Can't keep up with
Shrove
it.
Shrove Tuesday. The world's crazy these days. If you just look at the news. Yeah. That's the true horror. So please escape from the true horror of the news and look at terrible / well, maybe not terrible, but questionable horror movies.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about two of them today, right?
Yeah, but before all that jazz, have you
before that jizz,
I've got a bit of news. You've probably seen it. Is the Candyman teasers stuff has started to arrive? The Jordan Peele Candyman. So he tweeted
Candyman,
out
as Andy Condon would refer to
the Candyman is Mr. Jordan Peele's tweeted out like a bit of a teaser video where we get to see the guy, the guy who was Dr. Manhattan. In the Watchmen TV show series. Oh, shit, that's a spoiler. Ignore that.
There we go. Spoiler straight away.
It's
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
He'll be great as the Candyman, I think. And it's Jordan Peele said, if you press his tweet button, it will tweet Candyman 5 times from your account, and then you get to see the trailer before everyone else. I'm sure it'll be on YouTube. Within 2 seconds of it arriving anywhere. He'll be on YouTube.
Well, it's apparently just like the first look. So it gives you basically 10 seconds. And then the first trailer apparently officially drops on Thursday. I didn't realize what Jordan Peele's involvement in this is, but he's just producing it. Co-writer / producer. Director Nia DaCosta, who directed Little Woods.
But he's directing the director, I think. He's telling the director where to direct stuff.
Puppet strings.
Yeah,
I see. And then we also got a poster with his hook covered in honey. Looked a bit sexual, strangely. looked delicious. Made me want to put honey on a pancake. How do you feel about the logo / font? I mean, there we go.
It looks good. It looks good. I'm quite excited. I think there was a 5-second thing that went out, teaser video, and you heard him, the main actor, I can't remember his name, say one of the old lines, something about be my victim or something like that. And someone in a Facebook group was like, it doesn't sound like Candyman. It doesn't sound like Tony Todd. But I'm like, it sounds great. I don't understand what your issue is. Like, it doesn't sound like Tony Todd. It's not Tony Todd. So there's going to be a difference.
No.
It's fine.
Good to have it. We've had a long enough time since the original Candyman, and it's followed
30 years.
Get a new one. 30 years. Plus, I don't think it was, as much as it's a, it is a great film, I wouldn't think it's considered as like, you made me feel free to correct me, but my personal opinion, I don't think of it as like horror royalty as such.
I do.
It's just like one of those films. There we go. Feel free to correct me. I've said.
I think for some people it is, but for me,
I think it's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine to get like a remake of this. I think it's not like an untouchable film, is it? You know?
Oh, you mean like Jaws? You wouldn't want to.
Yeah, if someone was
Jaws,
going, "Oh, we're going to do Jaws, we're going to do The Shining, we're going to do bloody The Exorcist, we're going to remake any of that," you'd be like, "Oh no, leave it alone."
Yeah, but, I know what you mean. Yeah, this one I feel is ripe for remake. Plus, like I said, I'm just happy to get some more Clive Barker material out in the world and fresh and. Yeah,
and it would be nice to get even more. Hopefully, Clive Barker resurgence would be nice.
Well, they were going to do all the Book of Blood TV show stuff, which would probably be pretty great if they do it right. Like, I don't know if it really works a lot of Clive Barker stuff in today's world. A lot of it does feel like 80s or of the time, that kind of splattery, gory kind of romantic gore stuff. But I don't know. Maybe we're all ready for it now. Who knows? Let's see. Have you got any more news?
Yeah. So I was reading a little bit more about Robert Eggers and his next directorial offering after The Witch and The Lighthouse. So he's directing a film called The Northman, which is a Viking revenge film set in Iceland at the turn of the 10th century. Loves that. Loves all that, doesn't he? He penned the screenplay with Icelandic poet and novelist Dijon Mustard, this guy. So he says, it's a bigger movie than the others. I can say it's a Viking revenge movie and we're shooting in Europe. It's dark and unusually violent, so you know.
Unusually violent. Okay, sounds good to
unusually
me.
Unusually violent, yeah. So there we go. That's all we know about that. Obviously, he likes things that are set in various time periods. That's cool.
I think he likes... this is an interview. I think he... enjoy like his favorite part of the filmmaking process is recreating costumes and stuff and getting all the nitty-gritty details pretty much perfect for that time period.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's good. I like that. Exciting stuff.
And
you know how I feel about all the Resident Evil games stuff and including that in the news section as well. Resident Evil 3 demo is apparently on the way. Now, Resident Evil official accounts tweeted, Resident Evil 3 demo on the way. We'll have more details in the near future. Considering it's only like a month and a half away or something like that, I think we're possibly going to get it in the next couple of weeks. It'll probably just be a short one. The Resident Evil 2 one was like
20 minutes.
A timed 20-minute long, get as far as you can sort of thing. And also, some of the gaming... something like IGN and stuff have been getting their hands on and some videos talking about the mechanics of the Nemesis and all this other stuff, and it looks like amazing. Like, I cannot wait to
just look a bit slightly bit more actiony, did you not think?
Yeah, and I think that was what Resident Evil 3 Nemesis originally was a bit like. It was almost like Resident Evil 2 2.0, and it was almost like just a little bit more action, a little bit more threat. And I think that's it. It'll lean a lot, really heavily into the horror stuff in Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3 a bit. But I think that's when it's the series started to go, we're going to probably get on this action route a bit more along the lines. But yeah, very exciting stuff.
So I need to talk to you a bit about Resident Evil. So it was my birthday last week or something, maybe a couple of weeks ago. My friend Dita got me Resident Evil 2. So I'm finally playing it. I've spent about 2 hours on it so far. It's pretty fantastic. It's scary. It's not quite as like a visceral terror as what I felt with Resident Evil 7 and Outlast. That sort of first person horror. I do think it's a bit more like personable terror. This feels like, I mean, it's still scary. I mean, there's bits where I'm still screaming like a little kid when every little jump scare or zombie comes out. And there's bits where you're going through the dark corridors and stuff and you...
It's tough as well, right?
Yeah, I was doing that thing where when you save and then you do a teeny tiny bit more of a game and run back through the hallway to save again and then keep inching forward. Because if you saved recently, you feel a bit braver to move forward a little bit more without a bit more carefree.
I sort of started trying to do a replay of it like last week, and I was a bit like, God, I don't remember anything about this game. Like, I don't remember what I was doing, what the mechanics are.
Yeah.
Well, it's only been a year, but I might need to play it a bit more so I'm scrubbed up, ready for when Resident Evil 3 arrives.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna plow through this and then probably get Resident Evil 3 when it comes out and go straight into that. But I've still got Resident Evil 7 to play in VR. So I've got the whole VR headset now. I'm looking forward to doing that as well.
I would like to do that, yeah. Yeah, keeping up, sticking with games, I've been playing Soma this week.
Have you really?
Yeah. I'm quite a good chunk into it. And I really like it. Like, it's got a really interesting, engrossing story that unravels nicely.
Whereabouts are you up to? Like, what's the last big thing that happened?
Without thinking about big time spoilers, I have pretty much worked out what's going on with me and what I am and how I've come to get where I am. And I'm currently like walking through some pretty dark corridors, and there's like a armless dude who's kind of like in there screaming in the I mean, it's pretty scary. So what am I trying to do at the moment? I think I tried to escape in something called the Dunbat.
And I don't remember.
like blew up, so I've gone off to find somewhere else. If I'm going to use like an elevator or something to get myself down somewhere.
Down to the Mariana Trench.
That's the one.
Mariana Trench.
So I think that's where I'm at now. But yeah, I really like it. Like, I prefer it to something like Amnesia, because I think with Amnesia there were a lot of mechanics in that game which were really difficult to get your head around, and puzzles that were like almost impossible. The fact that this game doesn't hold your hand, but you know, you give things a little bit of attention, and it's pretty.
All of the there's all like computer terminals and stuff. There's a lot of like tactile stuff where you have to press one bit, leave it down here, and they feel kind of real, like the little computers. Yeah.
And you're like running back and forth and doing. There's a few bits where you're trying to recreate some artificial intelligence like world and simulation with a certain guy to try and get some information out of him.
And you kind of torturing them in a way.
That was tough. And it reminded me of that Black Mirror episode, you know, where there's like that tiny little computer version of you, and John Hamm is trying to break him.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very much like that.
They took a bit of that for Black Mirror. I think this must have come out before Black Mirror, I imagine.
Well, I've been kind of going crazy since we watched Underwater. I've been going crazy on the underwater,
the deep
sea stuff. I watched The Abyss as well last night.
Oh yeah.
Which is like, I think, pretty underrated James Cameron film, really. It doesn't really get talked of.
I can't even remember it, really. It's been years since I've seen
it. It's good, man. It's really, really good. It's okay. Like,
I'm unfortunate that again.
It's majestic, but it's also like nerve-wracking and quite claustrophobic.
Yeah.
It's good. It's really good. And it's like not a traditional sort of film like you'd expect it to be in terms of science fiction.
Just to check on Soma, just to jump back, have you looked in the mirror? There's that one bit where you get to look in the mirror. Okay,
I have looked in the mirror,
yeah.
I've looked in the mirror, so I kind of see what I am. That's kind of... I've kind of got my head around it, but I'm still expecting more twists and turns because it just seems like that sort of story. But yeah, it's really cool so far. I really liked it. I want to get my hands on sort of other sort of stuff. Maybe I'll go back to Amnesia, because I think I'd never finished that, and the other chapters of it I never finished.
Yeah, me too. I found those ones really scary and tough to play, but I think now I'm bit more well versed in horror games. Like, I've got Outlast 2 I want to play as well, and also the new Blair Witch game, which looked a similar sort of first person tent. Have you played that one?
No, I haven't. Is it on PS4 now?
Yeah. So Ed Harvey from Trash Tapes was playing it.
Oh, lovely. Maybe I need to get my hands on that next then.
Yeah.
That might be a good shout.
Yeah, man. I'm digging the horror game in at the minute. Other than that, I watched a few TV series I was catching up on, Always Sunny and that kind of thing, but also watched Sonic the Hedgehog, which I guess is a horror movie.
I mean, it kind of is, isn't it? Yeah.
What did you think?
Did I discuss that last week? I might discuss that
last
week.
Maybe you did, actually, yeah.
Maybe I did. Well, I quite liked it. Did you quite like it?
I think it was very, just a little bit above average. If I was a kid, it feels like it was just for a kid. And it feels like for like a 90s kid, like it's like an ET story, alien.
Yeah,
a guy has to take an alien into a different place to help the alien get back home is kind of the story, but it's fine. I mean, it was pretty cool.
I mean, I probably enjoyed it a little bit more. I watched it with like some kids. The kids were with me. It wasn't like I just went and sat with some kids and went, can I watch this with you guys? Is that right with you lads? So yeah, like I enjoyed it. It was a good family friendly film, and I'd really like the end credits. I think I mentioned that.
Oh yeah, yeah. The only thing is, Jim Carrey, it was really lovely to see him playing that kind of 90s comedy role again.
Yeah.
Like he did it so well.
Oh yeah.
Did you play Sonic Mania? Just to carry on with the games for a second.
Oh, the most recent one. Yeah, I did.
I found that game was pretty great because it recreated the original style, and it was like a 2D side-scrolling thing, and it was really good. But I feel like this game really fucking tried to troll you. Like, it would wrong-step you. Every you'd be going one way, and then you'd jump a certain way, and you hit like some spikes or something. In the old game, like you go, okay, I'll just jump over that next time. This one, you get to that point, you jump over it again, and there'll be like a trap door or something. He just pops out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it's like they knew every single thing you were going to make, and they were like, "Let's just trip them there and there and there." Yeah, it's quite annoying.
Controlled by a game, motherfucker.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
If anything else?
No, I don't think so.
I've just watched one other thing, which was the other Joe Bagos film that he released last.
Yeah, everyone watch this.
Last year. So I think I spoke about Bliss last week and I wasn't into it at all, really. Kind of done my head in a little bit. But VFW, which I think stands for Veterans of Foreign Wars, is that right?
Veterans Fighting.
Veterans of Foreign War. So this is like a cross between Assault on Precinct 13 and Escape from New York. And it's like the most non-John Carpenter film could ever be, but like it didn't feel like it was ripping anything off. It just felt like it wore its heart on its sleeve. It knew it was like a sort of grindhouse schlock of an 80s action film, with loads of gore. But the cast, like, was like people like Stephen Lang, William Sadler, David Patrick Kelly, and what's his name, Fred Williamson. So like a lot of people that you kind of recognize from being kick-ass dudes in films, and now they're all kick-ass old dudes together, banding together to take down this gang of violent punks who are like almost like zombies in a way, because it's really over the top. It's drenched in like neon colors. It's really, really, really gory.
Who put this film out? Is it Spectrevision again?
I'm not sure actually. I think Fangoria Films.
Okay, so that is
Fangoria Films.
Cinestate. So that's
okay.
The people who put out, I forgot his name now, Bone Tomahawk and those films.
Sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really good though. Like everything that Bliss was, like this wasn't. There was even though it had the same actress in it as Bliss, who kind of annoyed me a bit in Bliss, this time it's completely different. So
yeah.
I think this film just felt like it didn't take itself seriously at all, whereas Bliss felt like it took itself too seriously. So it was a nice refreshing. I'm so glad that it was as different as it was. But yeah, a lovely synth score as well. But it's just a really good, like, siege film.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think are always pretty good.
Cool, man. And then The Boys 1 and 2. Like I said, so I saw The Boy 1 a couple of years ago. I didn't watch it this time around.
It was called The Boy 1 when it came out as well. They just knew. They were going to release a sequel.
So, I mean, I remember the twist and I remember some of the sort of scares and stuff. I remember the tone. Directed by the same guy, right?
Yeah, so it's directed by the same guy. Let me just give you a little brief blurb for The Boy. So, Boy is a 2016 horror film directed by William Brent Bell. Stars Lauren Cohen and Rupert Evans. An American nanny is shocked that her new English family's boy is actually a life-size doll. After she violates a list of strict rules, disturbing events make her believe that the doll is really alive. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Rotten Tomatoes, 10%. Letterboxd, 2.5. For The Boy 1.
The Boy 1.
Yeah.
The Boy 1.
So, it's not off to the best start. What can we say about this? I mean, it's English, I believe. English produced. It's an English homegrown movie.
But it's not set in England, is it? Now, this is weird because So I think it's set in England, I think.
Yeah.
But both of these films, The Boy 1 and The Boy 2, have got like an American female protagonist.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's like and a selling the film
was,
sort of thing.
When I was doing a bit of research, it seems like the house where the film is, where the films are set, is actually in America.
It looks like a New England-y sort of house.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what it said. It says New England there, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people around the grounds and everything, and a lot of the supporting cast are all English. That made me feel like it was supposed to be an English house, or a house in England.
Yeah.
And little weird dolly, like the Brahms boy, a little boy Brahms. That, I mean, he's a little English square, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, so this film was on Netflix a couple of years ago, I believe. Me and Kat, my fiance, watched it. Why not? It looks like it could be in the genre of haunted horror movies that are like Ouija, or, you know, the big thing at the minute, Lights Out, or what's the big one? Conjuring Universe. It feels like it's in that kind of vein of horror movie.
How many, though? How many haunted doll movies can we really, truly stomach? I'm not really bothered with the Annabelle stuff, because I kind of feel like, I don't know, and this didn't really appeal to me, but I saw there was a sequel coming out. Somebody told me the first one was actually all right, surprisingly all right. And again, I watched it on Netflix, but I only watched it for the first time a couple of weeks ago. Okay. I think I actually spoke about it on this podcast a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's from my memory, it seemed like it hit that tone quite well of the Conjuring verse. I don't think it had quite as big a budget, but it seemed like it was hitting the notes, but it didn't seem to have the creativity of the scares. Like, especially in the second one, it didn't seem to have any of the...
We'll talk about the scares in a bit.
Okay.
But... I mean, I know we got up in arms about some of the scares in Ouija and Ouija. What's the second one called again?
Pre Ouija.
Origin of Evil.
Oh yeah.
and how like the second one obviously improved massively upon the first one.
Yeah.
This, I feel like the first one kind of hits some notes that are good, some notes that are bad. Doesn't end on a high, I don't think. But the second one, I know we're going to talk about the second one in a bit. It just really seems to just put 0% effort into everything. There are scares in it within these films that I swear are, you got the audio of a scare, like the huge violin squeal and like the deep rumbling of something, but you've actually got no visual. There was a couple of times when there was a scare, I was like, what am I looking for? What am I looking for? It's almost like it was a placeholder for a scare. They got right, scared to go here, bang. And they forgot to put the visual in. So yeah, that's the problem I kind of had with it.
Yeah.
It feels, and it seems like the mythology throughout these two films is so like disjointed and inconsistent.
Well, I kind of like what they were going, like they're going for like a double reversal.
So, I guess the
part of the film, the first one is an American girl comes to England and she's going to be a nanny for what she thinks is a real boy. It's like the Heelshire family. It's like an old couple. And they seem nice enough and they invite her in and then they sit her down and says, this here is Brahms. He's our little boy. Brahms is a weird name. It looks like it's some famous composer, but it sounds kind of spooky. Old English spooky. And then she's like, oh, it's actually a doll.
This is our son. He's actually a doll. They just go, here's our son. And she laughs at the first. So it's Lauren Cohen from The Walking Dead. He played Maggie in The Walking Dead. And she's really good in that. She's one of the good, consistent characters in that show.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it for a while. And I like her. I think she's a pretty good leading lady for a film like this. But yeah, she kind of laughs initially to say, what? Your little boy's a doll? And they kind of go, yeah, it's a doll. No, they don't say that. Well, they keep saying that. That's what anyone else would say. Anyone else, like she'd go, you've literally got to be having a laugh, haven't you? But I think she thinks,
yeah,
I could probably get a nice bit of money out of this, nice bit of bunts.
Yeah, because like she's escaped from her relationship in America, got a slightly abusive boyfriend maybe or something.
Got like an abusive boyfriend who's still like hanging on in there. Like he keeps contacting her friend. And he's clearly like looking for her in America, so she's gone as far away as she can.
How could he find her? All right, maybe this is explained in the plot.
Facebook, mate. Facebook. He's got the Find My Phone app installed on her iPhone.
Maybe.
Yeah. So So obviously she's trying to escape something, and she's walked in on a new horror, essentially. Well, I say horror. It's kind of like ridiculous to start with, because I just find a lot of elements of this film like funny. I don't know if it's, first of all, it's because he's like a little bit smaller than what like a boy would be.
Yeah.
If he was the same size as like a normal, I don't know, what's supposed to be like 10, 12 year old boy. If he's the same size as a normal boy, I think it might be a bit scarier. The fact that he's just like two thirds the size of a,
also, of like a, I mean, maybe they just didn't show us these parts, but if you're all like alone in a house and there's like some sort of doll thing, you're going to be doing some weird stuff and like around it, farting, like picking, like, do you see what I mean? Like you're when you're in your car, like you just make stupid noise. Well, if you're me, you make stupid noises, sing, do little voices for him. Like you tell him to shut up, or like you have like a weird ongoing relationship with him.
Shut up, Rob.
Like you do these things.
Rob,
like,
you're a little prick, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean that's the kind of thing.
Scratch your ass and then smell it.
No, and then make Bram smell it. What's that smell like, Bram?
What's that smell like, Bram? Nothing.
Beef.
You need to get your bloody snooter. You need to get your snots checked out, mate.
I mean, all the while you're pissing off this like demon potentially. You go, but
Brahms, don't respond if you're a little twat.
How embarrassed would you be? It's like when you realise someone's been watching the whole time, but it's actually a demon. Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, bloody hell, that's embarrassing.
Scratch my balls in front of him.
I'm a demon. I'm well embarrassed. I'll be honest. I'm not scared. I'm just embarrassed. You saw me do a lot of weird shit.
Yeah, you saw me do a roly-poly for no apparent reason into the kitchen.
those noises I was making when I had a poo, that's because I've got a medical issue that you I need to make. Those.
You were harmonizing with your own trumps.
Think we're alone now. Brahms. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's so absurd that it could be like a ridiculous horror comedy slash ridiculous episode of a sitcom where somebody ends up looking after a dolly. Little boy Brahms. And you obviously mentioned that Brahms sounds like the noise from the Inception trailer.
Brahm. Yeah, well, that's what they're called, I think. I think they're called a Brahm. Well, it's deep, Brahms. Deep.
Have you just done a Brahms, you dirty little bastard? You'd be blaming everything on him, wouldn't you? Was that you?
Maybe it's called like a Bram or something like that. But it is the Inception noise, the trailer noise.
Yeah. So it's pretty absurd because she's supposed to like, there's a strict list of rules, including like read to him, play music to him, put his food in the freezer if he doesn't eat it.
So what do they say? In the freezer?
Yeah. If he don't eat his food, right, put it in the freezer to save it. Freezer just like overflowing with his food. That little porcelain dolly hasn't eaten. Just, you got to be thinking, you guys, you need some sort of psychiatric help, guys.
Yeah, but they go like right away. They're like, right, we'll leave you to it. What's his name's like, right, best be off. keys. I'll leave you to it then.
See you later, Brahms. Did they say goodbye to him?
Yeah, they must do. No, maybe they don't because they want to get away from him, I think is the...
The one thing we need to sort of say from the get-go is that even though this film kind of sets it up as Brahms potentially being a haunted porcelain doll, we don't actually see the doll move at any point. It doesn't move on its own. It doesn't, you know, do anything.
It does in the sequel,
yeah. So obviously that's where the mythology starts to get a little bit skew with. Yeah. There's a part where she sees what she thinks is the doll crying, and she goes up to it. That's kind of creepy. But then she realizes there's a leak. Mm. And this land happens.
What
to
it
land
is at- actually is the real Brahms taking a piss.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, initially, when they leave, they're going on like a holiday or like a getaway or just off to have a life without Brahms dragging them down.
Off to off themselves, aren't they? I thought. Don't they?
Well, yeah, that's what it's revealed, but they don't say that to the grass.
They
want it. We're off to off ourselves. They just say we're off down.
Off to. The shops, yes.
Yeah.
The shops.
So initially, Greta, she like ignores the rules, basically does nothing with Brahms. She leaves him on a chair.
Yeah.
She covers him up with a blanket at one point. She's on the phone all the time. She's eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. She's chugging the wine down from the wine cellar like anyone's business.
Yeah.
And what else?
Well, there's a grocery man.
Yeah, this is weird. The Asda delivery dude is outstaying his welcome big time. All right, is there anything else I could do for you? Just fancy a chat. Drop my groceries off and leave me alone. So he kind of checks in, and then I can't remember how it's revealed or why it's revealed, but he basically tells her that Brahms is a real boy. He was a real boy, and he was killed in a fire 20 years ago on his 8th birthday.
So it's setting up that he's haunting the doll. It's like a Chucky situation going on. Yeah.
And yeah, they go on a date, don't they? Some sort of weird... Or I think he asks her on a date, and then while she's getting showered and dressed, like her jewelry vanishes and her dress vanishes, and she ends up going up into the attic thinking she hears like scuffling noises and stuff. She goes up into the attic thinking that someone's fucking with her.
Yeah.
But then she gets like locked in there and can't get out, and she ends up just sleeping up there all night in nothing but a towel.
Does she really? I don't remember that bit at all.
Yeah, I feel like this is just the director going, yeah, then you just got to sleep up in the attic in a towel. And then she explains to Malcolm what happened. If I was Malcolm, I'd be like, that's a definite bad excuse, and you've just basically completely stitched me up, and now you're hitting me with this. I'm embarrassed for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think they talk a little bit more about Brahms. There's a painting, isn't there, with the man and the woman.
The heel shiz. Is that what
the boy Brahms looks like the guy from Mad Magazine.
Well, in the paint. Okay, yeah.
Mad Magazine?
Yeah.
So then, yeah.
I don't remember any of this, by the way. I remember a lot of the opening.
I'm leading the way with this. It's only been a couple of weeks. Sorry.
It's all right.
So more weird things are happening. Like you can hear like a child sobs in the hallways. Like, phone calls keep getting cut off. And there's things where the doll does begin to start move on its own, but we don't see it. So we don't see the doll turning its head or getting up and walking off. The doll would like be one place and end up in another place. And obviously she finds that creepy. She's getting to a point now where she's starting to think something's definitely up.
Mm-hmm.
Brahms, or as we think it's Brahms, leaves her like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich outside her door. Obviously, what else would an American protagonist be eating other than peanut butter and jelly sandwich, maybe a hot dog from New York. And I think she gets to the point where she basically believes that Brahms is in the doll, and then she's like, right, better take this a bit more seriously.
Also, she's had a miscarriage or something, right? So she's like, wants to look after, this is like her replacement baby. Is that right? Am I remembering that right? You're not looking at me like I'm remembering this right. I thought she had she had some sort of baby issue. Maybe she couldn't have a baby or something, or...
Mm.
No? Okay. Maybe not.
She pretty much mugs Brahms off from the get-go. She's just like, fuck off, mate. What, you want me to look after this doll?
Yeah.
You're having a laugh, aren't you? You're watching the money roll in while I'm looking after this doll. Basically, when she thinks the doll is haunted, she starts to take the things more seriously. So...
Okay. Yeah.
There's a bit where she goes a bit nuts and tries to show Malcolm that the doll moves, and she leaves him on the floor. I think she draw a line around him or something.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then they go out. I can't remember. Anyway, more and more stuff gets revealed.
Yeah.
Malcolm tells Greta that Brahms was friends with this little girl who was found in the forest with her like skull caved in, and before the police could question Brahms, the house was burnt down with him in it.
Okay, yeah.
So potentially an act of arson, maybe his parents involved somehow. But yeah, here we go. Sorry, maybe I've got this wrong, but it sounds like you're right. She previously suffered a miscarriage after being beaten by her ex.
Okay.
So now, around about this time, starts to feel obligated to care for Brahms. So before, we didn't bother. This time, feels a bit more obligated.
Okay, yeah. So then the ex-boyfriend turns up. He's arrived from America. Sniffs her out.
First we see that the heel shears write a goodbye letter to Brahms and just drown themselves by walking into the sea with like their pockets full of stones, because that's going to work. Just put a handful of gravel in your pockets, and then the sea will take you.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know how that works. Maybe what's it? It must be like Dover, White Cliffs of Dover or something. Why did you jump off a cliff? Why did you have to?
Yeah, that would have been better, wouldn't it?
Do Midsummer just style.
See, because if I did like a suicide pact with somebody, I said, right, we're going to walk into the sea. I feel like I'd go into underwater, and then I go, oh, no, I ain't doing it.
Yeah, but the stones, though, they're there to keep you down.
Keep you down, yeah. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Pull your pants down? Share pockets full of stones. At least they're not like swimming shorts. You know, when they've got air in them. So I can't stay down. It's like a hot air balloon.
Floating crotch first. Yeah, but imagine that's how you. That'd be embarrassing though. If that's how you died. And you were found with your trousers down in the sea.
Just your trousers down. Yeah.
Grab up your ass. That'd be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but basically, then we get onto the third act of the film, which is that Cole just appears in the house. Just like a right normal ex-boyfriend would do, travel across the ocean.
He's got like a conquistador mustache beard thing going on as well, right? From what I remember.
Conquistador?
Isn't it like a goatee with like a twizzly mustache? Maybe I'm thinking of something
else.
What a
weird thing to remember about someone. Remember that guy who turned up? He was a bad guy at the end, yeah. He had a conquistador, but you watched Sonic the Hedgehog too much.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's just got a bit of a beard and long hair. He looks a bit like... Who's that dude who was in Upgrade?
Logan. Marshall.
Marshall Green. Yeah. He looks like him, but with long hair.
Yeah.
It's not him. His name is Ben Robson.
Boyfriend arrives. I was just saying, I think the boyfriend's just... He swings his balls around.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
He's pissing on everything, like he's showing his dominance, metaphorically, I mean.
He basically acts like, yeah, exactly what I've done coming to you and is really normal.
Yeah.
And you should be kind of glad that I'm here. It's very, very strange. Like, obviously a classic...
Douche maneuver.
Douche maneuver, yeah. Doucheman.
Okay, so, and he smashes the doll, I think, because... I can't remember the scene properly, but I remember that he kind of like does it the way because she's acting weird around it or something. So he's like, screw this. I'm going to smash your doll up because he's abusive. Yeah. That's what he's like.
Yeah, because he's abusive. So I think what happens is like Malcolm's there and obviously this Cole dude is initially like quite aggressive of him because he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing knocking around my missus for? Even though obviously that's not the case. Greta puts when she puts Brahms to sleep, she asks him for help.
Yeah.
Kind of go, yeah. And when he wakes up, he sees like a message in blood telling him to leave. And he kind of believes it was Greta or Malcolm fucking with him. And he basically smashes the doll's head to dust, doesn't he?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where the big reveal is. So all this time before, he was a spooky doll. And then he like burst out of the fireplace or something. I'm not too sure.
He comes out of a mirror. So like the house like is shaking and you hear loads of things in the walls. And Cole hears noises behind the mirror has a look. Mirror gets smashed in. And from back, now the reveal of this is kind of pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
He's wearing like a porcelain mask that looks identical to the doll's face. And he sort of comes out, but dressed a bit weird. He's just got like some sort of cardigan on and like long flowing curly hair.
He looks a bit like he's was in Blur or like one of those sort of Britpop bands. Yeah.
He looks pretty hench though. He looks like he gets initially. I was like, is he going to be able to be like a killer?
How is he hench? How is he not like a...
Exactly. How is he hench?
How is he hench?
What's he been doing in there? So Brahms survived the fire. He's been living in the walls of the house, and obviously everything that's been involved with Brahms moving and all this stuff that you thought was supernatural obviously isn't happening. It's been Brahms all along, coming out from behind the walls and fucking with everybody. So pretty nuts, but he kills Cole. How does he kill Cole? Does he just...
Stabs him,
smushes him, does something. And now it turns in, this final part of the film turns into like a cat and mouse, like stalker, serial killer type thing. But they go in into the walls and they find like the where they've been living, where Brahms has been living. They find her missing dress and jewelry is in his bed. Mm-hmm. He's a bit of a perv as well. And he basically, there's a final letter which reveals the plan of leaving Greta as someone for Brahms to look after, or just to be a... I don't know. Then she forces Brahms to go to bed. She goes, right, it's bedtime now. Bedtime. And he does go to bed like a good boy.
Yeah.
And he asks for a goodnight kiss, but then she stabs him with a screwdriver. It's very nice and definitely is against the rules, right?
I don't remember any of this. Maybe you remember the screwdriver? I remember him coming out of the mirror because it was a good moment. I mean, as much as I didn't really enjoy the film, it was a decent little surprise. Wasn't expecting that.
It's a moderate. I think I'd already heard this first. Annoying. Load, but I feel like after this, there are so many more questions. Loads of questions were left unanswered. So, yeah, Brahms basically fights with Greta, tries to choke her, but then she pushes the screwdriver deeper into him. He collapses. Greta and Malcolm run away. And then we do get a sort of like a final scene, which is Brahms, who survived, he's repairing the shattered doll. Even though the doll was shattered beyond any form of repair, because it was literally smashed to dust. And even if you wanted to put all the pieces back together...
He's got a lot of time on his hands.
Here's a pile of sand. I meant to turn it into... That's nuts.
And it looks like... It looks, by film two, it's pretty much back to normal. I couldn't even tell if it was smashed at one point. Also, another question... The big reveal in number two, because he gets smashed up in number two as well. How come he hasn't got that kind of thing going on in number one when he gets smashed up? You know what I mean? The face.
Because, as we've discussed, right, before we go into spoilers for number two, as we've discussed, this is so inconsistent. It's like they've just gone with the second film. Right, that was a twist in the first film. We can't do the same thing again. We're going to have to twist it again on its head and completely undo pretty much everything that came in the first film. There's no consistency.
Yeah.
It's just a load of bollocks, really, isn't it?
It's just a load of bollocks. Okay, well, in terms of grading the first one, I would say it would be unfair for me because I don't remember everything about it, but I do remember it being very middle of the road, a little bit less than middle of the road, really. I would probably go for a D off the top of my head, but that might be being too lenient. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think maybe I'd go for a D plus for that one, because I think it's got some interesting little... D plus sounds really negative, but I mean it's not original by any sense of the word, you know. There we go.
Okay, so number two, Brahms, they called it now with the subtitle The Boy Two.
Why wasn't it just called The Boy Two, or wasn't it called like just Brahms, or why not Brahms The Boy Two? Is just fucking weird, right?
Is weird. This one's 9% Rotten Tomatoes. It's 1 point less of Rotten Tomatoes. 1.7 on Letterboxd. This one was weird because I went to the cinema and it was rammed. It was absolutely rammed. There's tons of younger, I guess they're like teens, and they were like screaming their heads off.
Yeah.
It was weird. it was really weird.
Like, there was a lot. There was a row in front of me of people who were screaming their heads off, and they were reacting like they'd never seen a film before. They were like literally, they were like they couldn't believe what was unfolding in front of them.
Yeah,
where my eyes were rolling so far into the back of my head, I was like the Undertaker.
There was like a dream jump scare, and I heard someone say, "Oh, that was terrifying," like whispering to them, and I was like,
"The thing is, like these films aren't scary. Like they're not scary." Like, there might be a little bit of a creepy nature to some bits and some of the visuals, but they're not scary. Like, the actual scares only come from loud noises.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they come from. And if you're scared by a loud noise and you can't feel a jump scare coming when everything goes quiet, I said, these kind of horror films are made for a certain type of audience. And it's not, I wouldn't even say it's the general horror consuming audience. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's like a really, really casual horror audience who maybe their gateway to horror has been, you know, things like Insidious, possibly The Conjuring,
but even
things
those films, like that. I feel like those films have got more scares, more genuine scary moments.
Definitely, but that's like the gateway. That's like the gateway that they've had to films, and that these films are like the kind of things they like. When you see Annabelle Creation, it's like, oh, creepy doll, we're definitely going to see that. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, look, Brahms, another creepy doll, we'll see that. That's terrifying. It's that there's nothing about these films that aren't cookie cutter for scares, but also like almost a whole story in the way it pans out. Like
it's less about sort of, I mean, this is going to be, maybe this isn't all the way true, but it's along the lines, like it's less about artistic intention and more about funhouse moments, funhouse gags that are going to sort of get people. The better ones,
I think,
are the ones that are more inventive with those gags, and I actually feel genuinely quite creative and inventive with those gags. The ones like this one, where there's no creativity, I mean, it sounds really harsh, but they were phoning in the scares. I don't even know, there was one scare and I was like, oh, that was an interesting.
There were some moments where there was like a character crossing like a window, or suddenly a shadow appearing, and that was accompanied by that huge, that really loud violin bang noise. It's like, no, that does not warrant that. Like, be completely silent and suddenly a character passes a window.
Yeah.
Much more scary. Shit, did you see that out there then? Much more scary. Really makes you anticipate the scare. If you get like a massive loud noise with it, you kind of go, oh shit, that loud noise, I'm pissed off about that. And then you're kind of like anticipating the next scare. Right, when's the next bit? You're anticipating the scare rather than being invested in the characters and what is happening in the story. You're just anticipating the next loud noise.
But I mean, if this is getting people into horror and it's getting bums in seats to watch horror movies, then I'm all for that. I just kind of wish it was the thing that's getting people into cinema was something a bit more creative, I guess. Or would people who watch this and be like, oh, this is cool, horror's got a lot to offer. I do worry people go to see this and like, no, horror's not for me. But this isn't the best example of a horror movie at the cinema. But I mean, no.
A point I've made. Sorry to talk about jump scares again, but a point I've made is
you hate jump scares.
Is that an animated film for kids could have a jump scare in it with the same amount of like artistic flair as they do in here? Like, if there was, you know, those weird little horror bits they have in like Toy Story or something, when there's like a creepy area of a creepy toy or something, and you get a jump scare because, you know, it's the soundtrack suddenly peaks.
Yeah.
Like, that makes you jump because it's a loud noise and, you know, you're kind of almost like half expecting it. I honestly think like the real scares really do just come from, it's almost, for me, a real scare is when I can't quite look at it. It's almost like I'm like this.
Well, ooh. Yeah, there's two types of stuff for that for me. There's the one underwater, I felt it a bit, but like that sort of green room thing, you know, he sticks his hand through the thing and it's like, there's a visceral sort of genuine scariness for me for that.
It's like a body horror sort of thing to that,
but
yeah.
There's also the one that sort of gives you chills down your spine, like when I think of Hereditary, some of the scenes in that where there's like something in the dark, you can't quite see it, you're not too sure what it is.
Yeah.
Genuinely spooky.
Yeah. Something that's so otherworldly that you're just like, oh, well, that's not supposed to be there. Or like, what is that?
Yeah.
That, those are the kind of things that generally scare me.
Yeah.
But yeah, jump scares do get on my nerves. And I know that they're...
Mate, Blair Witch, the ending to that is terrifying, really. But
and I know that jump scares are really commonplace in modern horror. And they, and but not only are they commonplace, but they do have their place in modern horror. It's not like I'm saying get rid of all jump scares forever. It's just what I just wish they were done with a little bit more like tactile. They were a little bit more tactile when they happened rather than counting down the minutes. Like this the Boy 2 has probably got jump scares every, what would you say, every 8 or 9 minutes?
Yeah.
Consider, well, maybe even less than that, because this film is only 86 minutes long.
At what point in film did you, were you watching it and you were like, oh no? Like, at what point did you sort of realize, oh, we're not in for, because it's like 2 hours long, and I'd driven to the cinema on my own, and I was like watching it, and it was pretty much a minute in. See if this triggers you. Like,
a minute
in. Well, like, there's a bit where, in the opening credits, before anything's happened, it says the one company who's been involved is called STX Productions, and it says STX Productions, and I was like, oh no, surely that should be an STX Productions. Like, if they can't get that bit right,
oh no, grammatically incorrect. Yeah, that's.
And there was like a statue, and he had these little in the credits. He had these little, they're like drawing on accents, like little curly white accents. They look pretty, and they were quite classical looking, gothic looking. There's one statue. And they drew a mustache on him, like it wasn't supposed to be. And I was like, "Why have they done that? Like, that's surely."
There are some bits, like some bits in the aesthetic, like the text and the, and some of it's pretty good. But then when they start doing things like newspaper clippings and photos from the past and stuff, it looked like someone who just learned how to use Photoshop had done it, like a room, and they'd superimpose little Brahms in the background like that. He was there the whole time, Brahms.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, some of the old photographs. Alternative
titles for this film, right? Okay. So Andy Conduit Turner gave us Bad Brahms 5.
Yeah, that's good.
Brahms Strikes Back would be quite good.
What was that one?
Two Brahms. Brahms Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Two Brahms, Too Boisterous.
Are we talking like the number two? Like Fast and Furious, sort of.
Like Too Fast, Too Furious, but Too Brahms, Too Boisterous.
That's good.
And I don't know. I think there was some more, but maybe that was it. And in referring back to our episode on The Omen, Andy asked me if there were any baboons barking at Bad Boy Brahms. If anybody gets that, you're a true Horror Hangout fan. There were no baboons barking at Bad Boy Brahms, but that could have been... That could have improved this film. If they went to like a nature reserve or Longleat, I probably would have had a lot more fun with this.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him out and about with the boy, wouldn't you?
The boy goes out. Yeah.
The boy goes out, like trying on hats at various different.
It's like Baby's Day Out, Brahms Day Out. And he's sort of.
Brahms Day Out a little.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Katie Holmes is in this film. I guess she was the big sell of the film. Although she is. I guess she's putting effort in, but it seems a bit like she's phoning it in to me.
She's phoning it. We remember that she turned down The Dark Knight all that time ago, 2008. She didn't want to be in The Dark Knight, one of the greatest superhero films ever, one of the greatest films ever. But she said yes to Brahms, The Boy 2. She went, count me in.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably an easy sell. Some time in England, you get to spend some time in the countryside, chilling out and stuff. But like,
I think they must have shot some in England. They must have shot some in the US as well, in that house.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Who else is in this film? So there's a little boy, I don't remember his name.
Little boy Brahms. the little boy in it is called Jude, played by Christopher Convery.
He was fine. Like, I thought he was decent. Young boy playing. He looked selling it quite well.
Yeah, he looked a lot like the doll. Which was probably the best. Probably the only film thing that this film got right was the fact that they cast a kid who did genuinely look like the boy. Well, maybe they kind of tweaked the look of the boy a bit. I can't even remember.
Don't know
if it looked much different to the first one.
Yeah.
Maybe they tweaked the look of the boy so he looked a bit more like Jude, and it kind of added a different dynamic to. The creepiness, I guess, was the fact that this boy was clearly friends with the boy, and it was kind of like maybe controlling him in some way or influencing him in some way. And there was loads of ways this could have gone, you know, because Katie Holmes's character had like gone through quite a traumatizing event, and she wasn't dealing with it very well. Jude had been through the same event and I wasn't dealing with it very well. So lots of opportunity there for one of them to be potentially the cause of this, or the antagonist, or the true, be revealed as being. And I thought it was going to possibly go that way, that it was going to be one of them who was really, really possibly her, I thought, because, you know, she was the main character and it seemed like she was trying to protect her son, but that would have been cool. But the way it went in the end was a bit like,
yeah, Jude doesn't, after the traumatic event at the start, Jude doesn't talk. So, but then when you hear voices, it may sound like, is it the doll that's talking? But by this point, we all believe the doll isn't haunted. We've seen the first one. So we know that it's there isn't anything haunted about it. It was actually a guy in the walls. So this time it's like, it's still trying to sell you that it's haunted. So it's a bit like, what are they playing at here?
But did you not think that because we saw at the end of The Boy that Brahms was still alive?
I couldn't remember
the
that.
Real Brahms.
I didn't remember that.
So I thought, right, okay, so he's still alive and he's still fucking with people. He's still like around about, he's still knocking about. But then the more and more things that happened, the more and more you're like, well, it's like now they're making it more supernatural. Because how can they explain there's a part where the doll's head turns?
Yeah.
How can you explain that unless he's got it on a little string?
Maybe. Yeah. So what kind of stuff happens? So there's a lot of them just in this. They get away into the countryside, the dad, the son, and Katie Holmes.
Yeah. So there was a burglary in their house. These sort of home invaders attacked Katie Holmes and the boy, and she had a head injury. He ended up being silent for months because he's traumatized. Mm-hmm. And they all go to this property to kind of get away from it all. And it happens to be the same house from the first film. And they're exploring the woods, exploring the house. And then Jude finds the doll, the little boy Brahms.
Yeah.
Buried in like a shallow grave, covered in dirt. And as normal parents do, they say, yeah, you can keep him. Not put that horrible, dirty, disgusting porcelain doll back in the ground where
Jude.
You found it. What have you done there? Probably covered in loads of shite.
Yeah. Well, so she doesn't do that. Katie Holmes, like, gives it one of the most sensual bathing.
Oh, this is
bathing sequence I've ever seen in my life. What?
This bit reminded me of. Do you remember the scene in Toy Story 2?
I was going to say Toy Story 2.
The guy, like, cleans up Woody and sews his arm back on and cleans his eyeballs.
Cotton buds.
It's exactly the same as that.
Yeah, but like,
it's so weird.
I'd be like, I get the scouring pad, some of that bleach spray, just like give him a scrub down. She's like taking a like tiny time, really intricate, getting in the eyes and stuff. Like, that's good enough, mate. Like, what do you want to do? I'll put it in the dishwasher.
I'll give it a once over with a J cloth, and that'd be it.
Yeah, yeah. She's like chamois levering, like polishing it all up, brushing his hair. Yeah, it's
no wonder it ends up bloody. No wonder it ends up haunting him. It's like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Moving on, like I said, there's a lot of bits with them in the house just having weird awkward conversations that I don't believe any of the relationship between the dad and Katie Holmes. There's some dodgy acting going on there, just strange performances.
It wasn't the best. Obviously there's some tension between them because she hasn't really quite come to terms with the thing that happened. He's obviously like frustrated. Jude's acting like a creepy little weirdo. He's becoming more and more withdrawn. Carries a doll everywhere he goes. Again, this is another thing that's weird because the doll's so small, so they like kind of like put it over their arm, like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the groundskeeper, who's acting freaky.
Yeah. So groundskeeper is played by Ralph Ineson. He's in The Witch, and he's also Finchy from The Office.
Yeah.
Which I think I'll always know him as. He's obviously got the most deep, booming voice ever. Although he kind of, in his initial stages of the film, he seems like a good guy. Like he's looking out for them. He's keeping his eye on them. Clearly, we understand that he's obviously understands what's happened with Brahms before. Mm-hmm. So he's just trying to keep an eye on him. Carries a bloody shotgun everywhere. And he's got a dog which barks at Jude and the boy at one point.
I don't know anyone. I live in the sort of countryside area, and no one carries double-barrel shotguns around.
No, just constantly, just over their arm.
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to prove, mate? Yeah.
Okay, so there's loads of like weird stuff where the doll, the parents want to appease Jude and the doll because it's helping him get over his trauma. But then the doll starts imposing rules, like he has to have his own plate at dinner. He has to watch TV until 10 o'clock, whatever his rules are, I can't quite remember. And then, as big stuff starts happening, there's loads of bits where Katie Holmes is kind of like telling the kid off and separating them up, and she thinks she hears it move, or like, she's having a lot of dreams as well. I think there's like two or three dream sequences potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are probably the only jump scares which kind of feel warranted, because what's happening in these dream sequences is she's reliving what happened with the burglars, and that they kind of feel warranted, because why would the burglar be there again? You're like, okay, mm-hmm. So just the shock, the jump scare is, oh shit, it's a dream.
Yeah.
But apart from that,
about halfway through the movie, this is a boring movie.
Yeah, you can tell. I mean, for the length of the film,
yeah,
there is so much where you're just like, oh god. Like, I genuinely felt quite bored, and like checking the time. And oh god.
You know, I mean, I always probably check the time when I'm at the cinema anyway. At some point, but it's not like 20 minutes in. Like, no, the first 20 minutes, I'm normally well into the film. This, I was like, thinking, oh no, only 3 minutes have gone by. Yeah, but so there's like cousins in that arrive. There's like a little girl, a little boy, and then an older
boy. A boy, a really terrible, terrible actor. This little boy.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's just a little boy, but that can't be the best take you got.
Actually,
this,
you know what? I actually found this bit quite tense. I think I was.
This is, you knew something terrible was going to happen. Yeah.
But it seemed to be played out quite well as well. So I had Katie Holmes. Basically, the boys are playing outside. There's a croquet pitch. What you call them? And
croquet pitch.
Yeah, he kicks the edge of one of the croquet wickets. I think these are technical terms.
Yeah.
And it's like, leaves like a spiky stick sticking up in the sky. So you know something's going to happen. Katie Holmes is looking out the window at them. And it seems to really build this bit up. Like, she keeps looking at the doll, and then it's building up, the music's swelling and stuff. I found this bit quite tense. And then the little boy doll, she sees the doll's head move, and then the arsehole kid trips and lands and gets impaled on the...
He is a little arsehole kid. Like, to see an arsehole kid get their comeuppance so immediately is probably unheard of.
Yeah.
But what do you say? Probably didn't deserve to get impaled.
Not in the lung. Like in the leg or something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a little bit of a bastard. He's kind of like making fun of Jude for having the doll, saying he's a weirdo, and he keeps calling him mental.
He's a mental. Yeah.
You're bloody mental. You are. He's just a little bastard. And the little girl, like, he's got like a Dutch accent or something. She goes, "Leave him alone, Brahms." Not Brahms. Sorry. Whatever the boy's called.
Yeah.
Let him play with his boy.
Don't make me run. Sorry. I'm full of chocolate. Yeah.
Don't make me run. I'm full of chocolate. German again. So yeah. That obviously happens, and that's obviously one terrible thing. Then there's like, they have an argument at dinner, and the massive heavy dining table ends up being flipped over, and that's when the husband starts to say to Katie Holmes' character, "It's probably you doing all this. She couldn't, that table's bloody heavy."
Yeah.
She's like, "What?" yeah, and then we get a lot of cliche things, like drawings in a notepad, which mm-hmm. end
oh,
up
God.
Turning
yeah.
out to
yeah.
be not 100% real, but still like so cliche, like the kid doing drawings like that. And then there's lots of, he obviously writes on paper. First of all, we should get him a whiteboard, because he's going through paper like nobody's business.
Those art pads are expensive.
Yeah, jeez, he's writing on like see the ply on that paper.
Yeah.
And he writes you're making him angry and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's built up pretty quickly, and then she starts doing research into what happened to the doll.
Another cliche bit, which is, I found, I was like, couldn't quite believe they just went all the way with it. Like the internet research page, like internet research montage, where like the computer images are flashing across the screen.
Oh,
photoshopped images were bad.
She looks on Brahms's foot for like a sort of a serial number.
Yeah.
And she types it in upside down. Now, when she looks at it, the logo on his foot is upside down. So anyone with two brain cells would go, "Oh wait, is that upside down? Right, maybe it's this."
Yeah.
And she puts it upside down, and when nothing comes up, she like screws up the paper and discards it without a second thought. And then we return to it a little while later, and she's like, "Oh yeah, maybe I'll try that."
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, you shouldn't have kids. You shouldn't be in charge of anything if you don't, can't even think about writing it upside down.
When I think of some of the stupid things I've done like that, like forgetting passwords and shit, I'll let her off for that. Okay. It's a human moment now.
Maybe, but it just doesn't feel right. Do you know what I mean? I think when it's in a film, it feels like a moment that, you know, you don't
plot for your audience, like a natural,
your audience to be so far ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I know it's frustrating for an audience to go, no, you should have done upside, you're doing it upside down or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
So she finds out that Doll's got a long history of before the previous film, there's people dying all over the shop. There's always like parents getting killed by their little children who are making friends with the doll. And the doll's always there, always looks like he's been badly photoshopped in to every situation.
It's always like, it's like a family photo like that, and then the doll's there in the back. Like,
yeah, like high res. Like the rest of it's like a demograph, what they call it, and he's like a high res.
Yeah, yeah.
Black and white photo in the middle. Yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous. And then obviously as she starts to find out the history of the doll, while the husband is at the hospital with the cousin who got impaled, he just, some random local dude just starts going, oh, you're staying in that house, are you? Well, you never guess what happened with a dolly and a Brahms.
Yeah.
A dolly's a bad boy. And the Brahms boy, all that shit. Like, I mean, it's just nuts. It's just it whacks you over the head with, you know, from both angles, trying to basically tell you what the story is, and like, come on, give your audience a little bit of respect.
Jude goes missing. Yep. Kate Holmes chases him to the old house, which is the house from the first movie, I believe. She goes into the walls. There's a cool bit where she can't quite see something, and you see like the boy. It looks like the boy is like saying, "Come on, mummy, come on." She goes,
there's a jump scare in here, if you remember, it was a bit earlier, but there's a jump scare when she's in the walls, and it's honestly a jump scare for nothing. There's just a jump, and I'm like, what was that in aid of? It's like she turns around and the jump scare is that there was nothing there. That's not a jump scare.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Yeah. For God's sake. Jesus Christ. Okay, so what's his face is like wearing the doll mask now. Similar to what the real Brahms wore in the last one.
Little Brahms.
Big Brahms, so then what happens now? The groundskeeper turns up and he starts talking about Brahms and he knows about it. I don't remember what happens here, so...
The groundskeeper turns up and he's like, Groundskeeper Willie, he's basically been like being controlled by the doll somehow, like after the events of the first film.
He's the one who pieced it back together.
He's the one that pieced him back together. So Brahms, as in the boy Brahms, as in the grown boy Brahms, the real Brahms, is officially dead. A bit underwhelming, I guess. Oh, he's dead, is he? Right, great.
Yeah.
So he's basically being controlled, and so Brahms is really a demonic doll. Supernatural being that sort of like hunts down and becomes friendly with families, ends it.
We don't know exactly yet, like they still could be holding back the reveal on that, but the groundskeeper is, I don't know, doing stuff to Kate Holmes. She gets the shotgun, hits him in the throat with it or something like that. I don't know why he puts the shotgun down, but she gets the shotgun, hits him in the throat with it, runs to the house to catch up with him, and the little kid is now stood by like the fire with the doll, and she puts the shotgun down, and then she's like looking at the doll or something, and then the kid picks up the shotgun and is like pointing it at her. And then this is the reveal. So because I thought maybe the groundskeeper is taken place of is the proxy this time, whereas the other boy was the last time. But the dad turns up and he wallops. Because, oh, God, he's at a pub somewhere. And then there's a person there who goes, oh, you're from the Brahms house. Let me tell you all about the Brahms house.
That's why I got mixed up. Yeah. I forgot when that happened.
Yeah.
I thought it was at the hospital, but no.
Oh, yeah, it is at the hospital. Yeah. I think it's a hospital calf. he sneaks up. He wallops Brahms, the doll, over the head.
So bearing in mind that this guy has been pretty much the whole way through this film not believing that anything supernatural is happening or weird, suddenly this guy tells him, he's like, right, okay, it is the doll after all. want to go and smash the living shit out of it with croquet mallet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's croquet mallet. Yeah, yeah. So he wallops. It's, like I said, so they smash his face off, but this time there's a demon underneath the face, and it's been a demon all along. It's got like maggots crawling out of its mouth and stuff, and all this crazy stuff.
It's so shit. It's like that doesn't. It is honestly like, but that doesn't make any sense in comparison to what happened in the first one, unless we're meant to disregard loads about the first one. It just, again, it's another plot device within these two films that just has more questions appear than answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, then maybe when they do the third one, they'll answer it. That one will be called. What will that be called? Billy _ Brahms 2 _ The Boy 3.
_ The Boy 3. Brahms is back again.
Bad Brahms. Bad boy Brahms. Okay, so then the boy Jude, he comes back to his senses. He's like, he does what the American lady did in the last one. He's like, scoots him, goes, oh, I love you, Brahms. And then chucks him in the fire.
Yeah, yeah. So basically gives him the old, gives him the old one too, cheeky. The doll Brahms kills Joseph first, who's the groundskeeper dude.
Yeah.
Kill him. Like,
he just kind of thinks it. Like, just thinks.
Supersonic head thing. Professor X shit.
Yeah.
Smash.
just touches his head like that and he circles up here at his head.
Yeah. We'll be together forever, Brahms. And throws him in the fire.
Yeah.
Why was the incinerator there in the first place? Like, unless...
incinerating stuff.
It's not.
It's a house.
You
isn't
see.
It? Do we have incinerators?
But the fact that it's there, I go, right, okay, well, the doll's going to get incinerated now.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's
almost like, right, okay, well, we know this is where this is going. There are no.
Yeah.
Nothing surprising about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then basically that's it. The family are all right.
There's they like go a back post-credits to their house. Thing. Yeah, where...
They go back to the house, we're having a bit of dinner. Jude's talking like normal now. He's absolutely fine.
Won't shut up now.
If anything, like this event was more traumatizing than the bloody burglar.
Yeah. Why is this not more traumatizing? Sure,
well, it's just brought them together.
Yeah. She'll be having nightmares. Like, she will never stop having nightmares now. Get you.
No. It'd be like the burglars.
Yeah.
Burglars. I can't even say that word. The burglars with Brahms masks.
Burglars.
That's what it'd be. She'd be like, shit.
Yeah.
The boyglers. Hey, you're some kind of boygler?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. I mean, I've got to say, I appreciate that it's an English produced film. I think it is. And they're obviously making some money, making some manga. They're obviously getting people into horror, getting bums and seats in the theatre, which is always good. But I just wish it was a much, much better film. I wish there was much more effort put into the scares, into the gags. I wish there was any effort at all put into the scares. You can't just have loud noises for no reason at all. You've got to be creative. I mean, they kind of put themselves up against the American films, like the Conjuringverse stuff in this movie, but they're not even trying to match like the creativity of the gags. Yeah, it's really frustrating. Yeah.
It's really disappointing, as I said. Like, it's good that people are getting bums in seats, but I think as for like a real big fan of the genre, it's a notoriously like early of cinema horror releases in the early part of the year are notoriously not so great, right? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I never really know about February, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
February horror is apparently not so great.
Underworld was good. I liked it. Also, what was the other ones we saw recently? Come to Daddy. I thought that was pretty cool. I really like that.
Anyway, so yeah, but I'm glad what it's doing for getting bums in seats. But yeah, it's as a big fan of the genre, this is incredibly disappointing. It kind of does everything I don't like about the genre. It does, and there's so many cliches. Like, you just got to be thinking, how do these things keep getting into films like these days? Because they're overdone.
Yeah,
disappointed.
Okay, so I was going to rate this film a D-. I kind of feel like it's D-. I don't know what to say about it.
I think I'll go for a D- too, because I don't think it's considerably worse than the first one, but I think it might be. And so it's considerably worse than the first one, and the first one ain't even that good. Leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so trivia. I've got a name game for you. We know the naming convention, the boy.
Very nice.
So
yeah,
you know how the game works.
Just the boy, not Brahms the boy too?
I've just gone for The Boy on this time around. Okay. So I'll give you the plot of a movie, and then you tell me what the movie's called. Okay. Number one, a girl is given a glass of milk, but the milk is not what it seems.
The soy.
Correct.
Nice.
Number two, a very smart man goes around town doing very smart things until he does something very, very dumb.
The
go on, I can see you want to say it.
The doy?
Yeah. The doy? Yeah.
Doy, come on.
Okay, number three. It's good, but it's not right.
It's good, but it's not right.
Yeah, it's trying to make sense. It's a sort of an impression of a guy.
Was it the guy from Catchphrase? The Roy.
There you go. Okay, yeah, number four. Brad Pitt is an incredible action gladiator who attacks the town but has a bum ankle.
The Troy.
Yeah.
Bummed ankle.
Number five.
Yeah.
Some meddling kids sneak into a back garden to steal the neighbor's prized potato, but a security light comes on, and from the house they hear the old man shouting at them.
Is it related to potatoes?
I can't tell you that. I mean, sort of, but not really. It's related to some kids stealing a potato and then a man shouting at him.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't get that one. Damn, I'm annoyed.
The Oi.
I've really got to reduce my expectations.
Yeah, lower expectations.
Like, what's another word for potato? Come on. Think.
Then there's a red herring. Wait. Okay, doesn't matter.
Red herring.
Yeah. Okay. Man. This has been a long one about a couple of films that I don't think either of us particularly enjoyed that much. But I'm glad they're done. I'm glad we ticked them off the list.
Yeah, glad they're done as well.
Do we know what we're doing next week? I feel like we had a plan.
So we did have a plan. We were going to do Night, was just so pretty. However, I don't want to throw a huge spanner in the works, but The Invisible Man is out on Friday, and been getting favourable reviews. I think we're looking at 90% on Rotten Tomatoes currently. So that might be interesting to do, unless you'd rather have a break from new releases for a week and then go to it. It's up to you.
I'm up for doing either. I'm quite looking forward to Invisible Man, so I'll go watch it anyway.
Okay, let's see what happens next week. It might be Invisible Man. It might be Nightbreed. It'd just be a nice surprise for whoever tunes in next week.
Cool, man. Okay, and then we'll do Midian. What's it called? What's it actually called?
What?
The
Nightbreed.
Yeah. Midian's the sea. Midian. Okay, cool.
Place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Kovac Cameron for theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider rating and reviewing iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. Head over to Facebook and go join the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a right old dude.
Thank you, Luke. Thanks for everything.
Very suddenly, I'm dying for a Waz.
Oh. Go and enjoy it, mate. You've earned it.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.